Welcome to the Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal. We examine things like the habits of entrepreneurs, emerging trends, financing, marketing, unique ideas, big business moves that could affect small businesses, where to get help, even how to get started on your own. Today's stories, the southern cities that want attention as hotbeds for technology, and lessons about logos from the presidential campaign trail. We'll have those stories after this.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda Next Gen Firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome and unnecessary regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to michiganbusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's michiganbusiness.org to learn more. When you think of tech jobs, what cities come to mind? The San Francisco area, Boston, Austin, Texas. Guess who also wants to be included in that group? Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Morath says a couple of cities may be better known for southern lifestyles than tech jobs, but they're adding advanced industry jobs at near the same rate as the Silicon Valley area, thanks to the automobile industry. Eric, what have you found about the tech industry?
Where it's growing the fastest isn't only in Silicon Valley. It's actually places like Nashville, Tennessee, and Jackson, Mississippi.
Wow. All right, so what's happening there in Jackson and Nashville?
Well, it's the auto industry that's really driving these research and technology and engineering jobs to those areas. Nashville, of course, the country music industry is a big thing there, but the auto industry is a bigger thing there, too. Nissan has a very large presence. General Motors has had a plant in that area for a long time. And the U.S. auto industry as a whole is doing much better during the years they measure it, which is 2013 to 2015. And even down in Mississippi, we've seen a number of manufacturers opening up auto plants there. And that brings not only those jobs, but all the suppliers. There's engineering. There's research that goes around anytime you have a large auto plant in your area.
How about that? Wow. All right. So you said, too, management, scientific and technical consulting services among the fastest growing.
Yeah, so I think that's probably a combination of things, right? So you have that was specifically in Nashville where you saw that growing fast. So that's probably some connection to the auto industry. Of course, though, Nashville is home to Vanderbilt. It's home to another number of prestigious hospitals. So that could also show that the those types of jobs that might be most frequently associated with places like Boston or San Francisco are ending up in Nashville now as well.
Wow. All right. So what about the impact, though, of, as somebody pointed out in the story, like that the automobile industry can be cyclical with its sales, right? Great sales one year, not so great the next year.
Right. Yeah. So that's a concern. The report found that the nation is growing more dependent on the auto sector as a source of high-tech employment. And so that's a concern. That even Ford Motor Company recently said that, you know, we're getting pretty mature in this cycle. We had this long run coming out of the recession where people, you know, had let their cars get older and they were buying new ones, and then low gas prices helped prop up SUV and truck sales. But there's some question of if car sales can keep growing at the same strong rate they have if we don't see a better overall economy both here in the U.S. and around the world. So therefore, if you're gaining a lot of high-tech jobs in the South because of the auto industry, that might be a concern if the fortunes reverse in that sector.
Hmm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Morath. His piece is called Tech Jobs in Southern Cities Thank the Auto Industry. All right, so back to Jackson, Mississippi and Nashville, Tennessee for just a moment. Where do they rank right now, I guess, in terms of job growth nationally?
Well, in terms of just looking at these high-tech jobs, Nashville was the top in the country, growing 7.9% over the two-year period studied. That was just a hair above San Francisco, but Jackson was right behind, third place at 7.6%. Now, it should be noted that if you kind of look at where are these, the concentrations. I mean, Jackson's coming off of a fairly small base. They, the tech sector in a place like Boston or San Jose is quite a bit larger than it is in Jackson, Mississippi. They rank out of 100, they ranked 84th for a total number of jobs, but they were the third fastest growing.
Thanks, Eric. Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Marath. Coming up next, lessons about logos from the presidential candidates. Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio. Well, little, as you know, has united presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump over the past year, but they could have supported each other through difficult campaign logo rollouts. Have you struggled with the logo for your small business? Here's Sam Schwartz, editorial fellow at National Journal. He's got a behind-the-scenes look at the designs of logos and their importance. Sam, what about the logos?
So the Hillary Clinton logo was unveiled over a year ago now, and when it first came out, it was pretty widely panned. It was, the arrow was facing to the right, and it was red, so everyone was basically saying this is a conservative logo.
Right.
Is she saying that she's going to be moving to the right, or is she saying more center, kind of, is she abandoning the left? And then, as time went on, it became adapted, and so, for example, for LGBT Pride, they turned the arrow, and they made it a rainbow flag, and so the fact that it was very adaptable kind of helped it, and also the fact that it was perfectly sized to fit like a Facebook profile picture, a Twitter cover photo, things like that, helped it a lot. And so I think it was kind of over time accepted, and now it's been pretty widely applauded. So the Trump logo at first was pretty simple. His slogan, Make America Great Again, was prominently featured, and his name. That was it. And then when they picked Pence, it's kind of when everything went south, because it seemed kind of like they rushed the process a little bit. And so the T and the P were monogrammed in a way that raised some eyebrows, you could say, both for the way the T intersected the P and for the kind of thought of toilet paper that people had when they looked at it.
Right. So just thinking out loud here then, if the Trump campaign had given it time, would it have stuck the way the Clinton campaign logo did? Because sometimes, you can have a knee-jerk reaction and change things when, in fact, I don't know, a day or two may have gone by, it would have blown over. I don't know what the approach was.
So I think they made the right move abandoning it, because the Hillary campaign's logo was panned because it was kind of new and the rightward facing arrow, whereas the Trump campaign's logo was kind of sexualized. I don't know a better way to say that.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think that would have been the discussion, and I don't think it would have been one as easily abandoned as an arrow.
Right.
So I think by just abandoning it, sticking with Trump, Pence, the names, and Make America Great Again, they simplified it. It tells their campaign story. That's all they needed.
Yeah. All right. And so on the Hillary Clinton side, too, this was adaptable also to include Senator Tim Kaine on signage and logos as well?
So it was a little bit tricky for sure, because it was the H with the arrow. And so instead of just having the H with the arrow, they included Kaine in some way. I think the way that they did it was they were prepared in advance for, so if you in the story I talked about how USA Today reported that they had mocked up 16 different logos with first names and last names of multiple potential campaign running mates, whereas the Trump camp didn't do that. And so they were prepared for the situation, and it was adaptable because they had thought through all the kinks and they realized this is what they could do.
Mm. We're speaking with Sam Schwartz, editorial fellow at National Journal. He's got an interesting piece entitled The Do's and Don'ts of Political Logos. Any other candidates get panned early on, say, in primary season for their logos?
So there was some talk about Jeb Bush's logo. It was just Jeb with the exclamation point. People were talking about how he was, like, screaming at you or trying to make you enthused when he as a candidate wasn't necessarily as enthusiastic.
Oh, right.
And so that was interesting. Even though it was the same logo he used in his 1994 gubernatorial race, I think the fact that it was on a widespread national scale, people kind of laughed at it and mocked him about it. And then Scott Walker also had some issues because he made the E in his name into the American flag, and the E with the American flag was the same as a logo for a national eyeglass company. And so he had some public issue with that when they called him out for it.
Holy cow. I know that there was one person you talked to in your story who talked about the two cardinal sins when it comes to logo design. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So the first one was on a serious note. He said, never do anything without preparing. And I think that was a shot at the Trump-Pence logo, how it was rushed and how, because it seems like the way it was done was Pence, Trump wasn't sure that Pence was going to be his pick until about 10 minutes before he tweeted it out, is kind of how it's been reported.
Right.
And so it's pretty clear that they weren't prepared for everything that was going to happen. And so the Hillary campaign, on the other hand, was very prepared. And so I think the parallels between that and the differences in the campaigns, kind of, that was number one. And then number two, he said, never use Comic Sans.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Sam Schwartz, editorial fellow at National Journal. There's a logo lesson, right? Never use Comic Sans. Reminder, by the way, the Small Business Report can be found on our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com, as well as places like iTunes and SoundCloud. Also, if you'd like to share your small business story, I want to hear it. Free publicity for you, inspiration and tips for others. You can email me at gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. That's gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. Thanks for listening to the Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal.